This is the Better Reading Podcast platform with stories behind the story, Jane's Be Better podcast, My Book Chat with Caroline Overington, and more. Looking for a particular podcast? Remember, you can always skip to it.
Welcome to the Better Reading Podcast, Stories Behind the Story, brought to you by Belinda Audio. Listen to Belinda audiobooks anywhere, everywhere.
Hi, this is Cheryl Arkell from the Better Reading Podcast, Stories Behind the Story. We talk to authors about how they came to tell us their story. Kate Sobrano, welcome to Better Reading.
Very, very great pleasure to be a part of your community. All of our readers, they can't see me, but I'm making the love symbol with my hands.
Yeah, you are too. they just love memoir, my readers do, that my community. They love memoir. They love to hear about people's stories. You know Trent Dalton, the fabulous Trent Dalton, he said to me once, and I agree with this, he said readers have empathy.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
And I think that's why they like memoir.
Yeah. I think readers, and from what I've been experiencing with book public through the tours and in this period of time, the last 6 weeks of going and promoting the book, readers are also listeners.
Yes, yes, you're right. Yeah, they do listen very intently.
Yep.
Yeah.
They're sitting there and they're actually, you know, observing with their eyes and taking from the page a small glimpse of a person's insight to their own life and their own feelings, but they're not sort of they're not sitting there in judgment. They're sitting there listening.
Yes.
They're listening and looking, and then they find a part of whatever you're putting out there, they find a part of it that's similar to themselves, and then you are you're holding each other's hands across the distance, you know.
Mm.
Just in that moment, a friend has been made, a friend for life, and I'll give you an example of that. Well, Trent is one of those people that people are falling in love with, deeply, madly, truly in love with. And with Trent there comes immortals, people like this is, I love him.
Yeah.
I also love a lot of great authors, Australian authors, just love these men in particular, because there's something about when they're writing about their characters, I know they're writing about themselves.
That is so true.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so I'm falling in love with them.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. I think in fiction there is so much about self. Like an author will deny it. But if let's say you and I were given the same topic to write about, let's say, okay, we've got to write a story about taking our dog for a walk, right? Let's say that.
Yeah.
Your story is going to bring your experience of whatever that is, and my story is going to bring my experience of whatever that is, and that is in fiction as well. A lot of authors try to deny it, but I can feel them. You're right. I can.
Oh yes,
I can definitely feel them sometimes.
I never doubt it, and you know, and I, in a way, I think it's the greatest form of independence. One, and you'll think this funny because it's a complete dichotomy, but it's an independence, and then it's a connection with all of, because knowing that you are yourself. Entirely yourself and being true to your own song, you're writing that song, someone's picking up on it somewhere over there, they'll remember your voice and they'll hear you one night when they need you, and they'll go, I'm going to go back to that place, I'm going to read that place and that in that passage, particularly that passage in that book, and it's going to release me from the burden of comparing myself to others or thinking myself less than others or trying to shape myself for others, and it's going to make me feel completely myself. Because authors can do that. You know that in that moment, that phrase is probably something that they wrote to liberate themselves as well.
I agree totally. Let me introduce you, because we got carried away and I haven't done that yet.
Okay.
Kate is a singer, songwriter, performer, and artist. Kate celebrated one of the most enduring and inspirational careers in Australian music. Kate's jaw-dropping voice first came to national attention with her band, I'm Talking. Their debut album is enshrined among Rolling Stone's 200 greatest Australian albums of all time. And in 2014, Kate was inducted into the Australian Songwriters Hall of Fame. So this is her memoir that we're talking about, and you know that because we've already mentioned it. it's called Unsung. And Kate muses on the people and experiences that have inspired her, featuring her inspirational song lyrics, stories, paintings, and embroidery, and celebrating four decades of songwriting and recording on the release of her 30th album. I mean, you're a bit of a renaissance, and we call them renaissance men.
Yeah,
totally. Renaissance women, can't we?
Oh, actually, James Rain called me that a long time ago. I love that. I mean, he was the first one, and only he. I understand why he would know to call me that, because he's a little bit of a renaissance man himself. He's he comes from a very interesting family. I think his father is one of the Beefeaters.
Oh, wow.
At Royal Palace. I think that's right. I know he's very horses and hounds, let's put it that way.
Okay. Hey, listen, so talk to me about where you grew up and how it is that you came to music. Talk to me a little bit about your life journey.
Well, I'll start by telling you about my father, who arrived in Australia in probably just a few years before the lifting of the all-white policy of immigration policy. Not an enormous amount has changed, but definitely it was a significant kind of change for Australia at the time. He was immigrating from Hawaii, and he brought with him a ukulele, an auto harp, and a surfboard. Mm-hmm. And he was a young man. He would have been 20, 21, and already he'd had two children and one on the way, which was me. In the household, I was raised with music. Like most people had about 3 to 4 albums in a household, and those 3 to 4 albums were played in succession. We had Nana Mouskouri.
Oh, yeah, love it. I think I might have had that.
Yeah, we did. I don't know if this is the times. Yeah. Earth, Wind and Fire, Roberta Flack's first take.
Oh, yeah.
And it may have even been Madame Butterfly. So we had like a very broad. Oh, and in addition to those, sorry, so no, there's about half a dozen. So there was, and two Hawaiian albums of my dad's. And those albums shaped my internal kind of reference to the world around me, being that I was a new Australian, that my father was Hawaiian, that we were sort of somewhat exotic. My mother was Australian, and that we were an unusual kind of family on a street of other misfits. There were the Conheeties across the road. There were the Wongs down at the
bottom. Where were you?
In Northbourne. Mm. And I had, you know, I mean, we were all, each of us, the Conheeties, for instance, a very Catholic Irish family, the Wongs, a traditional Hong Kong family. There was us, who were the traditional mixed family, where, you know, my mum would enjoy telling our neighbourhood about our holiday experiences in Hawaii and teaching and learning how to do the hula.
Where did your parents meet? Did they meet here or in Hawaii?
In Adelaide, actually.
Oh, right.
In Australia, yep. Yeah, I mean, they're a very big story in itself, but just describing the musicality of it, I think my dad being a bugler as well, that was one last thing.
Oh, wow.
He's a bugler. And so there was music, and there was musical instruments, and there was a piano in the house. We have that really old-fashioned way of kind of entertaining ourselves with music and the written and spoken word.
Right. And were you singing at that age? Were you kind of singing along with your dad?
Yeah, we were. Everyone's encouraged to sing in a luau. And yeah. So if the song was pearly shells from the ocean covering the shore, you know, the whole thing, everyone would pitch in at the middle eight section. When I see them, my heart tells me that I love you. Everyone all harmonises, more than all those little pearly shells. Beautiful, friendly music. And it's encouraged to let people sing without fear of self-examination and saying, oh, I can't sing because I can't, I'm not a singer, and oh, I don't know harmony. Well, no, what happens is there's a kind of a beauty about the islands and the way island music is created. There's a place for everyone.
Yeah. I can't hold a tune, but, you know.
No, see, that's every Western person's go-to when they're, no, I can't sing. Oh, no, I couldn't possibly. Oh, no, I'll just ruin it. Oh, I mustn't. Oh, no.
Okay,
no.
I'm going to tell you. Sometimes I'm in the park and I break out. I like singing, but I can't sing. And I'll start singing. I'm walking my dog and I'm singing. And then people that walk past me stop. Oh, were you talking to me? I was singing.
Yeah, well, look at that. Hey, honey, there's been various great singers in the world that simply talk sing. Leonard Cohen.
Oh, yeah, love Leonard. Yeah. Hey, I want to know, did your mother sing?
My mother's a beautiful singer.
Is she?
Yeah.
So we had musicians found each other.
Oh, my mother wasn't a musician. No, my mother's a painter.
Oh, wow.
So she just sings because she loves to sing. And she's a woman that knows how to raise artists. We were raised like free-range chickens. My dad is actually a very, very famous martial artist, and in many countries in the world, I'm known as Tino Soprano's daughter because of just his ranking. He's the highest of his style in the world. And we had often 50 to 100 black belts in the backyard at any given time of my life. So I was...
You were safe.
I was safe, and I understood kind of fame.
Yeah.
In a very local sense.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, got that.
Because I was also looked after by all of them, and so I was precious. There was something special about me because I'm Tino's daughter.
Yeah. So when did you start your professional career? How did that come about? Like, were you rebellious in high school, or were you in the drama school, or what was your trajectory then into song, into music?
I actually did a keynote speaking event for primary school and high school principals this last month, mm-hmm. and I announced very early in the speech that I had left school at 14.
Yeah.
And I said it's because I am one of those poor students that kind of missed out on the opportunity to find someone, I guess, a champion who might have seen me in amongst the crowd. Mm. And, you know, it wasn't that I didn't want to be there. Actually, I really wanted to be there. I just didn't have what seemed to be the facility to understand what I was doing and how to get involved. I'm a great self-educated person now, in that I love to read, avid reader, love knowledge, love application.
Was it belonging? Was it?
No, it was actually, I don't know, and probably you could have called it a form of dyslexia or something, where I just wasn't really able to absorb the information. And also, and I think it was the times, it was the 70s, and education was changing. There was a lot more freedom, and then there were a lot more boundaries, and the two things were like at polar opposites to each other. Like, for instance, my last year at school was spent in an annex, which was kind of like an experiment for year 9 students, where you were going to be deemed fit for work at the end, or you would be deemed fit to continue with education. It didn't work. They don't really sort of do that anymore.
No, not in year 9 especially.
Yeah, and I felt that was kind of undignified, and I was a little bit precious and a bit proud of myself. But you asked me the question, and this is the answer. There was one champion. It was a music teacher, and her name was Mrs. Bradley. And in the year that I left school, I already had 3 to 4 gigs a week. And there's an earlier story to why and how music, which I'll tell you in a minute. But I'll tell you this much. When I did leave school and I knew exactly what I was going to do, I felt comfort in the fact that I had a profession, I could rely on it for income. I was happy. I was creative. And I was free. It was all good. And one day I was opening up at the age of 15 for Vince Jones at Hamer Hall, and I said, I actually wouldn't really be here if it weren't for one teacher at school named Mrs. Bradley. And I get to hear this little voice, I'm here. She's here. And she stood up, and the whole of Hamer Hall gave her a standing ovation for a teenager that was living on the stage, living out her life's fantasies, which was to be an artist and a musician. Mm. And here is how it started, and I'll give you the snapshot. Our families were living next door to each other, my mother and her sister, and each of us had 3 children to the family. So there were my brothers and I, and then there was my other cousins. And I would wander back and forth across. And one day I was singing in the kitchen, and I was walking in and I was singing, if you wanted the sky, I would ride across the sky in letters, would soar 1,000 feet high to serve with love. Right? Lulu had just sang it. I was watching the midday movies. It was Sidney Poitier, and it was To Sir with Love.
Love that movie.
Yeah. And it just replayed, and I knew it well, and I was singing my guts out. I was just like, rah! And my auntie looked at me in shock, and she went, wow, you can sing. And I said, no, I'm just having a bit of fun. She said, no, you actually can sing. So she called up a television show at the time called Search for a Star.
Yeah.
And though I was only 14, she lied and said I was 16. And got me onto the show, and I came second on a big grand final, whatever it was, doing To Serve with Love. Yeah.
Yay. Yeah.
That's how it started.
So I often look at people like yourself that sing, and you've got just such a big voice, right? And I think it's that sometimes people think that of writing, but I know better because I've worked in the industry, that you just sit there and you write and it all comes out. Well, that's not true. You're rewriting this, that, whatever.
Yeah,
with singing, though, from where I sit, it looks like it just, like, comes out. Is there a training that goes with it, like a deep training? Is there, you know, what does it take to sing professionally in terms of training, in terms of preparation?
Well, like any art form, be it writing or karate, there are many different avenues, I mean, of the way one engages with the act of doing it, right? And in Australia, traditionally, and in the most undocumented way, because there was no digital filming, there were no cameras, there was no phones, mobile phones. Mm. So the way that we learned traditionally was simply getting up on stage and doing it.
Yeah, well.
That's how we did it. If I think about my peers at the time, in fact, I remember 16 opening up for a lineup, and the lineup was Colleen Hewitt, Chrissy Amphlett, and Renee Geyer was the header. Wow. And I was a 16-year-old stud. So I didn't have pegs on myself. So I wasn't expecting a lot from myself. I was simply just going to make it through the night. I'd go up and put my requisite songs on stage, six songs, and then I'd just sit in the wings and I'd watch. And I have made a habit my whole life, actually. And you could ask anyone, what is Kate Sobrano like backstage on a big Australian-made tour or any ensemble tour? She sits there, and I do, and I watch, and I am in wonder of every artist that performs on the days that I'm performing.
Listening,
I never
and
go
learning.
Backstage. I don't let people talk to me while I'm listening to them.
Yeah.
I don't let management or other people kind of divert my attention into more important things or other important things. To me, when a person's singing live, they have my full and unmitigated attention. It's just completely 100% there for them.
Mm, yeah, wow.
And so I learn by watching how they look and feel. I try to inhabit their skin, and I imagine what it feels like to be that courageous. And then do you add fiction, which is the priceless part of being on stage, which is you can be whoever you want to be. Mm.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I've heard this, and I don't know if it applies to you, but often people say to me, I've got stage fright, like musicians. They get sick when they're up there. But once they start singing, I mean, you know, you would never know. Maybe you just explain that. That's where the fiction is. They're nervous before the fiction. Would that be right?
Absolutely.
I've not understood it before.
It's actually, like, I've never heard it said so perfectly, but that's exactly right.
Yeah.
Social anxieties are almost an essential part of what prepares the body to go and deliver what is essentially a fight and flight kind of activity. Mm. Mm. You have to place yourself in an arena and with no expectancy of failure, and you want to have all your senses tuned and ready to deliver because you're doing it in real time. Mm. It's the same feeling as doing a live reading. I don't know about you, but have you ever had that thing where your heart beats so that you can barely speak? Mm. Those adrenals that turn on, that's what makes performance so vivid and almost like if that is the price you pay for the act itself, well, it's kind of amazing. And if you can tolerate it and you can handle it, psychologically handle that, I think I was very lucky to have been 15 years younger than all of my peers, because I was never tempted to do it whilst on drugs or being drinking with them, or like I couldn't do it, because that would have been just far too dangerous. I mean, there are many people in the 70s and 80s who could be as intoxicated as you like and still perform. Me, I was learning, and my body was dealing with the anxiety of that and all the hormones and the adrenals. So what I did instead, so like you just said it, you just said it so beautifully, I would take myself by the scruff of the neck when I'm like couldn't breathe, and I'd throw myself onto the stage. And then in that place, I would pretend to be these things. And you actually can get really, really good at dominating your body and your thoughts through first pretending and then becoming.
Oh, wow. I love that. Talk to me about gender back then, like you were talking about the women that you were playing with.
You know, I'm going to be completely honest. I find, like literature, you can call a person a pronoun of any kind, but the writing itself will tell you exactly what gender you're describing. You know what I mean? Like, I think there's something fundamentally genderless about gender. If the person's just behaving in a way in and at the time, you're pretty certain you know who they are and what they are. You don't really need to have to kind of be specific. I know there's a big story about it because there's great discrepancies in the way people are paid and how they're honoured and respected. That itself is a different that's a different discussion. Mm. I don't prescribe to gender in music.
So you felt no pushback, nothing. You just did what
I felt. I felt the financial discrepancies. I did.
Yeah. Okay.
But I didn't feel like I was any less successful because I was a woman.
Yeah. Wow. Okay.
Right. I felt like I was an artist always, and the artist, by being an artist, I was defined by that, and that was above gender.
Okay. So tell me,
like, for instance, I suppose in the olden days as well, it was different with book. I know it's slightly different with authors because there was a time when women weren't allowed to publish books, and I wasn't born in that time. So I'm not trying to be insensitive to the different generational changes, but I actually think I was an expression of feminism in its first edition, feminism. I was free and I was fearless. I am fearless and I'm female.
And you female. I'll tell you a little bit of what happened in books, just from my experience, and I've been in the book business a long time. For a while there, we had gatekeepers. You know, we had the literary reviewers, you know, in the mastheads pretty much were the gatekeepers of what the recommendations of what people should be reading. Yet on the other side of that, 80%, 90% of the population, a reading population, are largely female. And if they're not that, they are the people that buy books for
males. Yeah.
That was that for a very long time. But it was largely the reviews from the mastheads were male, and they were usually, not always, but usually reviewing male books. Now, that changed very, very recently. Like, I'm going to say 10 years ago, 15 years
ago. Wow.
When social media came in, right, the barrier to review and recommendation came down, and readers could then decide what they wanted to read, and female authors went through the roof. Jane Harper, you know, Leanne Moriarty, all of those people, they were always there, but they weren't given the airspace until the reader could have an opinion and people could hear them.
Okay, well, that makes sense to me. I mean, I definitely think that is where. And certainly there are stories where I can tell you I had gatekeepers as well, especially when I was sort of in my ingenue phase, where I was easily introverted into my body as a sort of like as kind of the vehicle of my art form, where people could say too young, too old, too fat, too skinny, all of the above, and actually act on those suppositions to either give me space or no space. Never like the book people. You know, I identify very, very clearly with Jo March. I mean, she and I, when I was always reading and rereading and rereading the book, I always discovered so much of myself in her because she never asked permission to do anything.
No.
And even so in a way, maybe I'm a little blindsided by my own
tenacity.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know how you term this, but you went from, you know, singing with others, and I don't know the music language, forgive me.
That's all right. You can talk in full language. I think I might even understand
it. Okay. So when is it then that you became you, and how old were you? How did it happen? And then you became Kate Sobrano.
Wow, that's a very big existential question. I'm not sure I've got the answers to all of that, but I can tell you that it's just taken as long as it's taken to live up into the beginning of COVID to have a really good analysis of life and music of 4 decades worth. I think you kind of need to have 4 decades just to simply have a good case study for which to be able to understand one person. Mm-hmm. I mean, if one can hope to live 40 years in any particular profession,
and lucky enough,
then you've got enough source data, in my opinion, to evaluate what is a person's motivation. So I believe in COVID, I kind of was set back to zero.
Yeah.
And my senses were calibrated back to my very first purpose, which was always to create a good emotional impact on a person. I've been that child that always wanted to have their parents smile. I've been that person who always wanted to make a person cry with a good song. I've been that person who always goes to the aid of another without being asked. I won't let a child be hurt in public. You know, I'm just that person. And I think that my whole work over 4 decades has shown me that's what drives me to make the kind of art, the kind of music, the kind of culture that is Kate Sobrano. And then that defines me. I think that all of that.
I want to say you're younger than me, but in all my
life, we're the same age.
Are we the same age? Okay.
Yeah.
All my life, I have known you. You know, like I have known of you. I know Kate Sobrano. I know Kate Sobrano music. So it's not like what happened to, it's never been a conversation what happened to Kate Sobrano.
Oh, is that
She's
great?
She's always been there. You've been there in all the milestones of my life. That's a pretty extraordinary career to make that happen.
It's beautiful. It's really special. I'm really super glad. There were sliding doors moments when someone had said to me and offered me more fame or more this or more that. I would say I would gladly take all of the touch points of my life and all the people that I've known in my life, and I'd keep that, please, and I wouldn't take all of what you're offering, because I've had people like yourself, Cheryl, who I've worked with, who I've sung for as a 15-year-old, who are now 58-year-olds in the audience. And similarly, we've been friends, quote-unquote, since we were 15. And they're as interested to know, they're as curious and mystified by what are her passions going to lead her toward next. They're like, we want to see this happen. And sometimes they're in an audience too and it hasn't fired, and I've watched their faces, I've known. It was an interesting exercise, but it didn't fire. I'm cool with that. And we recover together. They always come back. We always come back together.
Do you know, earlier or mid-year in, I think it was June, the first week of June, I got really sick and it was terrible. And I went to hospital and they said something like 3 days. And I was like,
what?
Yeah, exactly. What? Anyway, what I'm getting to is I'm fine. It turned out not to be a misdiagnosis, but they were able to pair it back. And I'm 100% fine.
That's so brutal. Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
It's life-changing. It's super scary, right? But getting back to you and getting back to our conversation, people have asked me many times since, what did I think about in those 3 days? What did I reflect on? Would I have changed anything in my life? And, you know, No.
Oh, aren't you blessed?
No,
oh my God, that's beautiful.
But we are blessed, aren't we?
We are blessed. We are blessed. I think we've lived in a time, a very uncommon period of evolution of the world. No war, particularly within our lifetime, you and me. Are you a 66 baby or 65?
64.
Okay, so you just picked me at the post by a year. But the thing is that our lives have been spent curiosity and I often say it's like a limpet. I reach for, I contract, I reach, I contract, reaching, contract. And we've been allowed to do that because we've been offered space and protection, and I think it's been an uncommon life.
Yeah.
I think we've lived an uncommon life.
Well, I honestly, hand on my heart, I wouldn't have changed a thing. I wouldn't have changed a thing. I was just like, okay, all right, well, that's it from me. Thank you very much. It was good. It was not the way I wanted to go out. But
that says a lot about you and your character. I remember singing actually for Mark Hunter, the singer of Dragon. Now, we were singing together at his, basically was going to be his service, but he wanted to do it while he was living.
Mm-hmm.
So he was dying and he knew his time was coming and when it would come. And I remember I'd only just kind of met him. And it was like feeling like that story in one of those old novels. You're saying goodbye and I've just said hello, and how does one live it like this now? I only just got to meet you and I've already having to let you go.
It's hard.
And he had that sort of, like, similar to you, he had that sort of quiet confidence. It was like, it's okay, you'll survive and life will go on. I'll meet you down the track somewhere, you know. You're like,
and we've done the best that we can.
Wow.
COVID, I want to touch on that briefly because you talk about that. It was a tough gig for me. I have lived by myself for a long time now, but I've never been alone, right? And I've had a really full, fantastic, you know, I have a really full, fantastic life. But COVID made me lonely.
Yes. Yes.
So what did it do for you?
Yes. It was a dark kind of, I thought that, I've actually heard it written since. And it was Nick Cave who was talking about it in a podcast. He said, I thought it was an opportunity for the world to take stock and make some significant choices about what would happen next. But I think we were also, and winded and unable to, I was sort of rendered stupid because I knew that I could complain about my condition, my internal condition or my subjective condition, but everyone's was going to be worse than mine. And so it didn't count. So it blunted every ambition, every passionate thought, every, you know, lifelong dream, you know, in an exact minute, and it wasn't worthy to think those things. And also it was, I had that kind of like terrible shame of thinking, and you're one of the lucky ones. So even if you wanted to sort of complain, you couldn't. So that is a form of like that's a kind of isolation that it almost doesn't even have a name, does it? It's just like being hit with a blunt object, bang.
Yeah, it really winded me as well. I know a lot of people that really used it to their advantage, but they had people around them, you know, whereas, I had to, you know, I mean, look, you know, and like you, I'm privileged. I found a way, but wow, it was really internal sometimes. I was like, wow, how did I get here? Yeah. But anyway.
Yeah. God help us, that books and other things gave us, I actually remember a film, and it's kind of, it's like it's a bit of a daggy film, but I loved it. I liked the concept. It was called Fifth Element, and Mila Jovovich, she's playing God, right? She's sort of sitting there. There were times when you'd see the world flicking by like she did on the television screen, and you'd sob mercilessly about like how much we'll miss, how the beautiful things we'll miss. And then I walked out the door on occasions. This is just the cruelty of it and how duplicitous it was, because I'd walk out and I'd go, nothing has changed. I'm still breathing. Look, that tree looks exactly the same. It doesn't know that there's COVID escaped in the world and the birds are singing, and this path looks pretty, you know, well, what's going on here? What fresh hell is this? Like, what the? I don't believe any of it. This is the.
I know. It was hard. Do you know the only thing there's the sadness that I have around it, because I'm well and truly over it. But the sadness was that I think we had an opportunity to do better. Like,
well, you know, I think that's what I was alluding to. Yeah. I think, like, we could have
climate change. We could have kind of made some changes then.
We were all deprived enough to discover that, you know, there are many things one can live without. Clearly,
yes.
So missed opportunity, and I think it. But without getting into politics or anything, I think that it's made it possible for others to take advantage of mankind in a way that's kind of quite gross and despicable, which only serves to make the arts more important.
Mm-hmm.
Education, literature, culture,
literacy, everything.
You know, because if a person can can think for themselves and be able to articulate their inner thoughts and protests. I think we should all be staying a lot more than we're actually saying.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Now, listen, yeah. Lovely, we're out of time.
Oh!
I know.
Actually, can I leave you with this? I don't know where I've got this, and it's paraphrasing and it's terrible.
Go on.
But when someone says, give me a man who's read one book and he could be my best friend, and give me a man who's read none, he could become my worst enemy. We just established that we are good friends. We've been good friends and we hadn't even met each other.
But we knew, right? We knew.
Yeah, always knew.
Are you going to give me a tune to go out on?
Am I going to give you one? A tune?
Yeah, yeah.
To sing a tune?
Yeah.
Ah. Oh,
goodbye, farewell, I'm off.
Actually, Vera Lynn, I did a gig on the Gallipoli commemorative ship, mm-hmm. which was as equally as joyous as it was moving. And I was singing each night, I'll be seeing you in all those old familiar places. La, 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 la. And the line goes, I'll see you when the sun is gone and when the skies are through, or whatever the words are, I'll be looking at, I don't even know the words, but the melody just kills me. I'll be looking at the skies. I'll be looking at the skies, but I'll be seeing you.
Oh, my God. I mean, what? Beautiful. You're an angel. Because the book is called Unsung. If you want to find out more about the beautiful Kate Sobrano, go get yourself a copy. Thank you. Thank
I
you.
I only wish I had all the words for you.
That was cool.
Hi, Nara.
If you'd like more information about Better Reading, follow us on Facebook or visit betterreading.com.au.
This podcast is proudly sponsored by Belinda Audio. Belinda audiobooks are available on CD and MP3 from online booksellers and bookshops everywhere, or you can download from Audible, Google Play, or the iBookstore. We've also created our own app called BorrowBox that's available from both the App Store and Google Play. All you need to do to get it working is to download the app, join your local public library, and you'll gain access to the world's best collection of ebooks and e-audiobooks available for you to loan on your phone or your personal device. Belinda, we're here to enable you to escape, imagine, grow, and be inspired through the power of storytelling. Belinda Audiobooks. Anywhere, everywhere.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
If you enjoyed this podcast, leave us a review and check out the other podcasts on the Better Reading Network.